What's going on, people? Welcome.
Give it a second.
Oh.
It takes a second for it to... Damn, now I got to trim this. I'm not going to do it.
I'm sorry, man.
Go.
Welcome, people. Welcome to the Most High Show. My name is David. I will be your host. Today, we got a great show. We're going to be talking with the founder and president of Eternal Strength, my man Wes. He'll be on in a little bit. But first, we're going to have the recovery rundown after these messages.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome back, people. Welcome back. All right. So right now we are going to go into a clip of a segment of the Recovery Rundown on a real hot topic. Check it out.
Welcome to another edition of Recovery Rundown. I'm Melinda Hansberry.
And I'm James Goodson. Earlier this year, train wreck and recovery phenom Demi Lovato announced that she is California sober. This refers to someone who may be in recovery but still uses other drugs in moderation like marijuana and the occasional psychedelic.
In Demi Lovato's case, she also drinks occasionally. This revelation comes just a couple of years after she experienced a near-fatal overdose from a wild mixture of heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine. In interviews, Ms. Lovato says although she has not used any of these particular drugs since she nearly died, she does occasionally drink alcohol and smoke weed.
So part of my process now is like not defining the parameters publicly because I don't feel like it's anybody's business but me and my treatment team. But it's a term that a lot of people use to identify this path of moderation with the help of some green plants.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
And so green is the key word.
Mm-hmm.
After Demi Lovato's revelation, the term California sober immediately trended and became a hot topic within the online recovery community. The term may be catchy, but the concept isn't new. Lots of people participate in Dry January and will refrain from alcohol for many reasons, whether it's to simply detox or to improve their physical and mental health. Others may fear they just have a toxic relationship with booze. The fact is, refraining from alcohol doesn't make someone sober if they still partake in other substances.
While it can be healthier for some people, being California sober is not full sobriety. Experts say that this lifestyle could be detrimental to anyone in recovery. Addicts who choose to be California sober are risking relapse on their drug of choice. Here's addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky.
First of all, it's been tried and tried and tried and tried. It doesn't work. God bless her, it doesn't work. Now, the thing about people with addiction is they have to prove it to themselves.
Yeah.
And this is part of her journey, and it's good for now and good for her. She's right. It's not one size fits all. She's absolutely right about that. But the idea of moderation just doesn't really work. What people do is they replace one drug with another. And insofar as your motivational disturbance, we call addiction, is active, which is being tickled by these substances, it will progress. This is what people miss, is substance use disorders are progressive. They don't stay static. They get worse in all cases. Now they can go back and remit and sort of get better and then worse, but she's at risk of progression while she's not, this is the key thing, she's not surrendering. So you have to, you know, if you're using your brain to make decisions, it's the brain with the disorder and it ends up taking you to places you shouldn't go. So you have to surrender to the fact that you just can't do that.
Whatever path to recovery you may be on, we want you to know you are not alone and there's always help available. Call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline anytime at 1-800-662-4357.
All right, folks, that was the hot topic. California sober, man. To talk about this, I had to bring in my California native, my good brother, Reverend Christian Jansen.
Hey.
What's your take on this California sober?
Hey, that was a good transition.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. This is what I got about that. Mm. If you got what I got, I've tried. If I could do it, boy, I'd do it.
Yeah.
But whatever it is I got, I don't drink Pepsi responsibly. Mm-hmm. So I have a disease of more. It doesn't matter what the substance is. Mm-hmm. But what I think is there are people who abuse drugs, and maybe they don't got what I got.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like you're speaking for yourself type of.
That's what I'm saying. So some people might not have what I got, and so they can get away with moderation.
Yeah.
Or they can take a long period of abstinence and then go back to try it. And they might be all right.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny, you know, I think the real twist in the name is sober. I think that's what, like, you know, sends people, gets people off kilter with that, the terminology of, regardless of what state it is, you know, I don't see sobriety as, you know, using things in moderation.
You know, okay,
that's
yeah.
me. And like you, I have tried California Sober before I guess it was ever a thing. You know, I honestly, I was like, all right, you know, my problem is this, and I'm just going to chill on that, and I'm going to be doing this. And, you know, I'm going to be home at a certain time. I'm going to make sure I get up and go to work. And a lot of times that worked for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, I would only stick to the, and a lot of times it was alcohol and marijuana was like the substance I turned to if I would, like, I'm chilling, y'all.
That was your maintenance.
Yeah, that was my maintenance. And yeah. There was always a time that a relapse came from that because, you know, I'd be at the bar and all of a sudden I'm the last person at the bar except for a couple more people that got something else going on and I get right into it. Right. And that caused a couple of my relapses. So, and that, again, that's just for me. You know, so I don't know. I tried California Sober before it was called it, and I didn't do too well, personally.
Yeah. I think, and not to beat a dead horse with this topic.
Yeah, but it is the hot topic, man.
I'm not sure, because I don't even have a horse. And if the horse was dead, I wouldn't even go near it.
Nah.
Yeah, stinky. I got nothing to do with dead horses. So I don't even know why I said that. Like I'm living in the...
That's cool, man.
Wild, wild west.
But I got what you said.
But you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're talking
about. I don't want to like, but I do think that a lot of people are drug abusers.
Yeah.
And whatever it is I have as a spiritual malady, in which I looked to drugs and alcohol to solve my malady. Mm. Drugs and alcohol were my solution, not my problem.
Absolutely.
I am the problem.
Yeah.
And whatever that is that I have, I think every human has it on some level, but for me, with the disease of addiction and the way that it's activated, I got so used to escaping. So anything that helps me escape my reality or change my reality, like Netflix, sex, hashtag shout out Leslie, whatever it is, like I will use whatever it is to escape reality to an extreme when I'm not living in the solution. When I'm living in solution, I take life on life's terms. That's because I have a spiritual malady. That's just how I kind of see it. So if somebody wants to try it, I think some of the literature would say, try it.
Yeah, I think it does.
Go ahead. If you think that's the solution for you, try that. And that's what the big homie Dr. Drew said in the clip, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to go through your journey and through your process.
Yeah, real quick before we end this, I saw this thing and this dude was like, you know, he's this guy from Cornell. I guess he's like promoting like moderation using even, you know, cocaine, heroin, whatever you're using. And he was talking to Dave Chappelle, responded on that topic, and he was like, oh man, guy sounds like every functioning addict I ever met. And the dude was like, yeah, but he's not an addict. And then Chappelle goes, let me guess, he can quit anytime he wants to. Shout out, Mr. Chappelle. But thank you, guys. That was our recovery rundown topic. You know, we'll be doing this on every show, man. It's a good information piece for us. And after this advertisement, we are going to meet my brother, Wes.
Why Most High Media? because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who've been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable.
What I didn't know is I just started, this walk with a monster, and that monster was mimicked as an escape not too long after it would be my master, and I didn't know how to stop.
All right, folks, what is happening? Man, I'm telling you right now, okay, from a personal viewpoint, I am very excited to introduce our next guest, all right? He is the founder and president of Eternal Strength, which is a, well, I don't want to get too into it. I'm going to let my brother Wes explain those things himself, but I guess I'll just introduce you, man. Welcome, Wes. How are you doing today, brother?
David, I am. It's a pleasure. It's an honor. I want to give a huge shout out to you.
Oh, thank you.
To all of the Most High Media family. This is a beautiful studio that I'm sitting in, so it feels awesome to be here with you guys.
Awesome.
Christian, Leslie, Jeff, everybody, for you guys welcoming me in. So,
man, appreciate it,
yeah,
man.
It feels
much
awesome
appreciated.
To be here.
It is a pleasure to have you. Now, I only met you one time.
Yes.
All right. And I was having a really bad day that day.
You held it together great, man. Your energy you were still giving.
Yeah. It was a rough time, man, for me at that time. And that morning, my brother, Christian, all I wanted to do was sleep. And I was like, man, I'm sleeping in. This is it. And he woke me up at like 7, like, come on, let's go. We're going to breakfast. And I was like, I wanted to say no so bad, dude. And I said, all right. But when I got in his car, he told me, we're going to come meet you. And I was like, you're looking forward to it because I haven't met you yet. And I'm telling you, when I met you, I mean, it was basically just like an introduction. But like what I felt, like I'm intuitive nature. But the first thing that I felt when I met you was like I just saw passion and love. And like it had nothing to do with like the tattoos on your eyelids, man. It was just your essence, bro. It was just, you know, you being there, and it was just a great time, and it changed my day, you know.
Awesome.
I didn't have to compartmentalize a bunch of stuff. You know what I'm saying? I was able to move on my day with a better attitude because we had met each other. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And David, I'll just say that's because I'm an extremely special human and I give off powerful energy wherever
you do.
I go. And it's really, I say that from
that's
not
real.
An egotistical place, but from, no.
That's
dude,
real,
I felt,
man.
I felt the same, brother, I felt the same vibe from you. And even with social media and being able to get on there and see you speak and your essence on there, I felt like I knew your spirit somewhat before we connected in person that day. So it was just a confirmation.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So let's get to know you a little bit better. All right. So let's start off with some basics because I really don't know too much about you, brother. Where are you from?
So, and I can hear my wife's voice, man, ringing in my head because I'm an awful summarizer. So I'm going to go quick. I was born in Des Moines, Iowa.
Des Moines.
I don't remember it. I lived there for a year. Then we moved around and we went North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and then moved to Atlanta when I was about 12.
Okay.
So Atlanta's home, man.
Atlanta's where it's at.
Powder Springs.
Okay.
Powder Springs, Georgia.
Now, again, like you are working in like in the therapeutic field right now. We'll talk more about that later, but let's get a build up to how that came about. Like, what was your younger life like?
man.
You know, what was life like for Wes?
Yeah, so
back
I mean,
in the day.
Beautiful upbringing, and I had a lot of freedom. So I have one little sister, her name's Hannah, 6 years younger, and then my dad, Jim, my mom, Ginger, they built and shaped me in beautiful ways.
Awesome.
And my mom has her master's in behavioral analysis. My grandmother's got her EDD in psychology.
Oh, I see some influence.
I come from a strong lineage of these women that helped me see human behavior, society, culture in a certain lens from a young age.
And wow, so what an advantage, dude. That's great.
It was awesome. And it was, you know, I fell in love. I was never good with sports, and I didn't really connect with anything but like comedy and then music. And I fell in love with guitar at
about
13. And just that music and art were two of the things that made my heart open up and sing. And I felt this magical just being free when I was younger. And right. So growing up.
So were you in bands all through like high school and stuff like that?
No.
Okay. So yeah, well,
I just played solo, man.
Oh, so what was what was social life like when your teenage years coming up?
Man, so middle school really rough, tons of anxiety. And I think it was just kind of like general anxiety, but just really socially anxious. Mm. And then I was lucky moving into high school. We moved right across the street from the high school.
Okay.
So it kind of mediated my anxiety, and I was like, it's right across the street.
Oh, you can get home quick.
Exactly. I can be home. And so, but I had a cool experience in high school, man. Really connected with about five or six guys. Mm-hmm. Shout out Justin, Bobby, Mike, Scott, and we rolled together, Nathan, through all of high school. And so it was a really...
So you had a crew.
Yep. I had a crew, and these were solid, awesome guys. Compassionate, caring, really cool.
That's great, man. Now, I do know that you're an LPC, so after high school, an education, a higher learning came next, right? So what was
but
that?
Before we even get to
that, yeah, let's do that.
17 to 23.
Okay.
Super rough.
All right,
so like right until high school, all those good guys, super like cruising and good, and then I just veered, man. I was working at a CD shop at Town Center Mall. I met two of my best friends, Josh and Robert. Robert's passed away, Marine Reserve, beautiful heart, soul. But man, I started running hard. I fell in love with marijuana.
Mm.
It escalated to cocaine, methamphetamine. I ran hard with that for about a year and a half. It was so much, so quick. Three arrests, emotional turmoil, anxiety, depression, suicidality, maneuvered through it the best I could, hit a place at about 23 where I was, my soul was exhausted.
Wow.
And I was like, man, I can't do this anymore. I came away from the hard stuff. I was still smoking all the time and just miserable with who I was.
The thing that I'm getting from... you explaining, you know, your past a little bit, right? It sounds like you just like flipped upside down at one time. So, what was the turning point? You're raised with these solid dudes. You're hanging out. You know, home is closed, so you gotta have a little bit of safety. But you do have this anxiety in you, wherever that comes from, right? But what you're hanging out with these dudes. You're playing music with yourself. Where does it turn? How does the turn happen? What happens?
Man. I've done a lot of reflection and examination. I think I could speak about it from like a psychoanalytic standpoint and all these different places, but you mentioned anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I think the quieting of my anxiety happened with drug use, and it was, especially with marijuana.
Yeah.
It was an immediate kind of like, okay, I can calm my mind, my overactive,
that's like medicinally, like how marijuana is used today to do that same thing. But
now
other
meth,
things get...
Not the same.
but meth?
Not the same. Have you ever seen the debate between methamphetamine and marijuana? The cartoon that does it? It's brilliant, man. It's called The Master Debaters, and they have marijuana debate meth, and it's ridiculous. But then you mentioned, man, it's like... There was, David, it was sensation-seeking, risk-taking, and looking for something, you know, Anthony Kiedis from the Chili Peppers talks about it, man. He says, like, they call it getting high because you're trying to touch God, man.
Mm.
You're trying to supersede transcend.
Yeah.
Yes, like, and I think that's where it led. So at first it was the calming, and then it was the experimenting with and right. pushing the boundaries and living on the fringes. Yes. And I gravitated to that because yeah. at least it felt like most of society was disillusioned and not happy, and I had this.
Oh, real, yeah, it's easy to get that, you know, at yeah. young age, everybody has that moment where, like, you look at the world and the way people are, like,
yep.
that is not me, man. I am not down with that.
And that was it, man. It was like, I don't want any of this, and we're so fucked up, and society's yeah. so messed up. What are we doing? And so it was this seeking. And I love these philosophers, man, Deleuze and Guattari, these French postmodern philosophers, and they mm. call drug use a false line of flight. And they say a line of flight is kind of seeking for something that's going to burst open and mm. allow you freedom and expansion and potentiality and salvation. And they say at yeah. first, drugs look like
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
look like this line of flight, and you're like, bet, this is it. I'm on it. I'm exploration and consciousness and
oh,
all
I feel
this,
so creative. I'm yeah, going through it's making
expansion.
Me yeah, like my mind is just blown away because of these substances yep. that I'm intake, and it's taking me to this like trend, this like spiritual place.
Yeah, you know,
this and it is an escape. It's a definite yep. escape from like looking at life and from this negative viewpoint. It's like now I get to go. You know, where none of that stuff is at, man. And I like it. It's cool. Yep. It's risky.
Yep.
It's all those things.
But then you notice, man.
Then.
So many of us do. It folds in on itself, man. It's
yeah,
a black
man.
Hole. It's everything that it promises. It ends at a road of destruction and debauchery and soul loss and the walking wounded and the realm of the hungry ghost and seeking and trying to feed this thing that never gets fed, never gets satiated, and
it's the biggest lie, man.
Yeah, and it's the walking wounded, man. Mm. And it's and I'm grateful for what pulled me out from it. I think it was God and epiphany and my own heart that kind of woke me up. But now, as I walk through the world, it's like, man, how do we reach a hand out and the walking wounded that are ready to stop that mm-hmm. seeking and searching, give them a hand.
Amen.
In whatever way.
That is awesome. When you got to, you know, that point, you know, of where, you know, like you said, like God reached you and took you out of that craziness, right? Did you see, was treatment seeked through that whole thing? Was there any institution that you visited through the process, or how did that go?
No. But, you know, man, it was funny.
So was it like a self-reflection?
Yeah.
And you're looking in the mirror like, this has got to stop, that type
arrest,
of thing?
The arrest, these kind of like small stints in jail,
yeah.
and then these times of reflection. So mm-hmm. these natural consequences were happening.
Yeah.
The only treatment was, and I talked to my parents about it to this day, they say we started to look at everything we could. And we were looking at these programs, and we were setting our own boundaries. And they linked me up with a couple of therapists, licensed clinicians. And I remember one I saw out of his house, and he tried to connect with me about motorcycles. And I was like, yeah, that's great, dude. And I got in my Explorer, and I, like, rolled a joint in his parking lot and, like, backed out. And I was like, I just wasn't there.
This ain't it.
I wasn't ready, and I wasn't receptive. So when it hit me, it was December 2005. I was sitting in my apartment. I'd quit using hardcore stuff, man, because it was going to kill me, and it was clear.
Oh, were you, like, rocking a California style of sobriety?
Yeah, I was, as Mrs. Lovato would say, I was California sober. The green, you know what I mean? The green.
It's all green,
baby. Dude,
I was
smoking a half ounce every 3 days, and not even really high anymore, but just kind of regulating.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of people came over. We all smoked. They left. And I tried to quit like hundreds of times, man. I'd be like, that's it. I'm going to quit smoking
tomorrow.
I'm going to get on my grind. And then my buddy would call me and be like, dude, I got that fire dank. I'm coming through. Let me smoke you out. And I'd be like,
All right.
Yep. and then I'd be back.
But tomorrow.
There. Yeah.
Tomorrow.
And man, I remember this night. I was 23, 24. And I'm 39 now. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there and everybody left. And I was watching a Red Hot Chili Peppers DVD, mm-hmm. live at Slane Castle by myself. And I started thinking about my sister, man. And she's awesome. And I'll get emotional talking about it, mm-hmm. man. But like, she's never used. And I was her biggest role model. Oh, and yeah. She looked up to me. And I put our family, not intentionally, but mm-hmm. through a lot of stress and strain. Yeah. And this wave came over me, man. And I was like, what have I been doing the last 7 years?
Wow.
I've picked substances and escape over my family. Where could I be right now if I wasn't using? And I remember going to the mirror and looking at myself and just having really intense stuff, man. Like, no wonder people don't trust you, because I was lying to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it was this moment where something clicked and I was just like, I know right now that I'm either going to steer a different direction and have some potentiality to find peace in my heart and salvation with my life and live in a way that feels like I'm growing, or I'm going to continue this and be miserable and fold in on myself and never be able to find peace.
Came to the turning point.
Yeah. And that's the last time I smoked, man. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, listening to that, I just think, you know, it is a blessing that you had such an awesome family, like an awesome support, like to be able to, like, you know, be in a position where you're like, you know, loving your sister so much and then realizing, dude, what kind of role model am I being right now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I do not want to hurt these people anymore.
Yep.
Where am I going to be able to have that moment? And for it to be a life-changing moment shows to me how important, like, support is.
Oh, man. Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I work in the field of counseling, and I see so many people that don't have that. And they, you know, that's why I thank God for, like, the rooms. I thank God for NA and AA.
Yeah.
And, like, any kind of therapeutic support that's offered for a lot of addicts out there that just don't have it, or they might have burned the bridge. Or at there's times where, you know, you're so lost in your addiction that you really don't think you're worth it.
Yeah.
Or you don't think you even have it. And there is people that support you. And, you know, that support, man, is a life-changing thing. If you were on your own, doing your own thing without those people in your life, who knows what would have came about.
And you mentioned those rooms, brother. Like, I remember I did 90 and 90 AA meetings, NA meetings, and my dad went to a couple with me. But they're powerful, man. It's the only place on earth where you can show up in any state, wherever you're at, and people are going to bring you in and be there and listen to you and support you. But I do remember, man, I was at one NA meeting, and my dad and I were sitting there, and it was over off of Windy Hill, man. And this dude was like, long gray hair, big ass beard, motorcycle jacket, and everybody shared. And there was tears, and they were sharing, and they were talking. Mm. And it gets to this guy, and he goes, my name's Frog, and I could kick everybody's fucking ass in here. And I was just like, and nobody questioned him, dude. Everybody was like, I mean,
okay, Frog.
Yeah, Frog probably you can, cool. man. Yeah.
No crosstalking.
Every one of those times I was in those rooms, even if that wasn't the thing that I, you know, I didn't stay with 12-step. I worked them in a certain way organically. Mm-hmm. They're so beautiful. And I feel like for anybody in your field in counseling, it's not about having the epiphany and getting to the place where I'm good now. It's about having the continual support in whatever way it needs to
that
show.
That's AA, it, man. NA, it's a family. Fellowship, brother. Yep. Yep. It is a true fellowship, man. And it's a fellowship of support of like-minded individuals, man. And that is so vital, you know, like, you know, I just think of trying to approach, you know, being sober in isolation or something like that. Or like, you know, trying to be stoic about it and trying to, like, really grind it out. It's just, I don't think it works.
Well, they talk about, who is it, man? Bruce Alexander. that wrote a brilliant book called The Globalization of Addiction. And he says that's what we do with the prison system.
Yeah.
We rip people out of their tribe, their family, their community, their culture. We put them in jails. We put them in isolation. And then we blame them for this disease that they're dealing with or trying to work. And we expect them to be able to get better in that environment.
It's a tough one to get better in, dude. It's a tough one. And I'm telling you, like, I know that very well. And, you know, it's like you're in the belly of the beast. But, you know, again, thank God for my higher power.
Rock and roll.
Thank the Lord, man, because he was there in that time facing those same issues, you know, that isolation, that being away from everything. And, you know, he was there for me. You know, my higher power was there for me during that time. And that was like a life-changing moment for me, that whole process in that place that you described very well. It's very difficult, man. So anyway, so check it out, guys. We're going to go to a do like a commercial, I guess, an advertisement. And we are going to come back and we're going to talk about the other side of things with my brother West after this.
We packed up to tell the story of a young lady who lost her daughter.
So there's a extremely high correlation between suicide, mental illness, and substance abuse.
I'm on the ground. I'm on the ground. Sir.
I think as of this year, there's about 14 million people in America who have a co-occurring disorder, and a little more than 7% of them seek help for it.
You know, in my addiction, I felt like I was better off dead.
I'm here to talk about my daughter, Megan, who committed suicide when she was 28.
There's enough hope in the people that do recover to where I keep going and keep showing up at places where I'm needed.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm gonna tell you right now, man, we got a dude over here named Jeff, right? On the ones and twos over here, and he is directing this thing like a champion, man. I appreciate you, dude. I appreciate it. So again, guys, we are back with my brother Wes after that short break, and I want to talk about now, man, what is going on with you today? What is this eternal strength that I hear so much about? What is that?
Man, so it is Eternal Strength Experiential Therapeutic Youth Center. And so we are a rich combination. I was about to say rich and luxurious, and I was like, why the fuck would I say that, dude?
We are a luxurious condo on the Upper East Side of Roswell.
But when I say rich, I don't mean like that. I mean just like this just beautifully a rich tapestry.
But we're a blend. That's good. I like that.
We're a blend between a community youth center and top-tier mental health therapeutic support. So we have a beautiful team of 13 healers, mentors, clinicians, and we provide therapy, family therapy, therapeutic mentoring, process groups, psych ed groups, anything and everything to build community and provide mental health therapeutic support for youth. And we call what we do radical youth work. And this is for youth. We say 12 to 25 is kind of the population we serve, but we've seen younger and worked with older. But anybody...
Well, when you work with the families, I mean, that's a lot of age group right there that you're covering in that.
Yeah. And we love doing family work.
So, but when you say experiential, right? So, to my understanding, that's like a multi-sensory type of therapy, like psychodrama, music, art. Is that the kind of stuff that, like, you know, what does that look like at Eternal Strength?
Yeah, absolutely. So, experiential grew out of humanistic psychology in the 70s, and a lot of person-centered.
Oh,
Carl
you're talking
Rogers and his work,
dude. Yeah. That is my dude,
man. Oh,
man.
He's amazing.
That was the
first
book I read in college.
Okay.
On becoming a person. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yep, yep.
Dude, Carl Rogers, I don't know why he doesn't get the hype that he should get in the field, man. Yep. I think probably because Maslow, whatever, but dude, and humanism, like doing counseling today, therapy today, Look up Carl Rogers, guys. All right, he is the true, in my opinion, the true beginning of all that.
Yep.
I love that.
A lot of people say like person-centered, but what he did and how he approached the work, he was brilliant and talked about full authenticity, unconditional positive regard, self-actualization, all these ways to connect. And so when you say experiential, you David, you named it, man. Like, we have a music arena, an art room, we have a ceramics room, we
Sweet.
Do open art group, we have so many unique eclectic healers that use expressive arts as a form of therapeutic processing. You mentioned psychodrama. We got a mentor, Emily, who came in, and she's starting a, we're calling it Expression Lab.
That is
cool,
man.
And it's using drama and theater to work through different emotions. And it's my baby. It's my heart. It's my soul. I bled for this thing, and it's my everything, and I live it daily.
I love it, dude.
And I'm, but it's God, man. I'm so blessed at the synchronistic alignment of healers and who came on and what we're doing. It's crazy, man. Sometimes I can't process it because it moves so quickly, and I'm just trying to stay in the present and experience the gratitude of what's happened and how the expedited growth, because all this came from my private practice.
Wow.
So I did my LPC.
That's a licensed professional counselor.
Yep.
It is not easy to get, folks. No. That's, you have to be passionate and like dedicated to get that. Dude,
yeah.
I have much respect for that.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was something that I just kept driving towards. But even in the masters, I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know if this is what I want to do. Mm. I don't know if this is going to be it, because I didn't see therapy being done in a way that like really made my heart sing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got that LPC. I worked with a company called Vive that did experiential youth work.
Mm-hmm.
And for 7 years, man, I went and worked with young people, no office. And we went mountain biking, hiking, rock climbing. I went skydiving.
Yeah, like
with
wilderness
and
all that. Yeah, that's a big thing for
anything
experiential
to connect
therapy.
On a human level.
No doubt.
And do this mentoring. Then I started private practice when I started the PhD program at the University of West Georgia. That was 2014.
Shout out.
Almost done. Only took me 7 years. But, and then my private practice, man, exploded. Like,
what a blessing.
And it was, but then I started to freak out because family after family, young person after young person, I didn't have another place to refer them to do more holistic, experiential, humanistic. I could see what these young people and these families needed to do deeper growth work.
Right.
Not to say there wasn't good programs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I saw what they were.
You saw the
for.
Antidote. Like, I know what you guys need after this.
Yep. And
it
I
wasn't
finally
available.
Went, fuck it. I'm going to build it. And I could have stayed really comfortable, man. I was cruising. It was me solo. I didn't have to deal with anybody or work with a large team. But it was, man, it was like I could see that vision so clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So my buddy, Zach, we hadn't talked in 24 years. We reconnected. He was living in Hawaii doing mind, body growth, subconscious programming stuff. We connected online. We couldn't stop talking.
Mm.
And basically I said, look, man, here's my dream. He said, I'm coming back through Atlanta. I said, why don't you hang here, man, and help me work on this? He came on board, and the last 19 months, we've bled everything, man, like crazy.
Oh, so is this like fairly new then?
We opened April 2020.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, okay. Yep. Awesome. Oh, okay. That is so cool, man.
Served over a couple hundred families.
I mean, I feel so bad because you invited Christian and I to go there, and I had
man.
Dude, I got to come out there and check it out.
Anytime.
I'm so interested in that.
Yeah.
I love that, dude.
It's the people. I felt very alone in private practice, and I was like,
so now you got a squad.
Yeah, man. And these people are incredible, and they understand the heart and the soul of radical youth work.
Mm.
And the dopest thing, man, every single young person wants to be up there.
I love it, dude.
At first, there's a little like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to do this shit. And then like, dude,
especially like that stuff. Like, you know what I mean? I'll hang out.
Yep.
But now you're going to make me like grab like this drumstick.
But man, it's been, and then the moments that it have like floored me have been when I see four kids that I used to see in private practice that never met one another in the backyard in a group, like processing and doing. It's just these mystical moments that are so beautiful and overwhelming. And I mean, they hold the healing, man. Nobody's going to heal you, and nobody can do your work for you, but we can build a sacred spot and start to get carve down. Space. And they're vibing with it, dude, and they love it. And it's just been beautiful. But I got to give the most praise to my wife, who held down the fort at home with our two girls the whole time. I was like crazy maniacal attic style building the center.
I do want to say something about that now that you brought that up. Whenever, like I had like this, when we sat down and ate together, there was like, the only way I could explain it was like a Crimson Tide moment. Okay. It was like, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
No. And I thought you were about to talk about football.
No.
Like, shit. I don't know anything about sports, David. No. Don't do it.
No, Crimson Tide is this great movie, right? With Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington. And like, it's all about this generational like debate. And it's all like in the midst of like a possible nuclear war, right?
Okay.
But anyways, real quick. So they're talking to each other and it's like a real tense situation. And he goes, so, you know, what do you think is the true meaning of war? But there's like laughter. And Denzel goes, like, he's like laughing, like big smile on his face. And he goes, in the nuclear age, the true enemy is war itself. And when I spoke with you and I thought about that ever since I talked to you, because we were laughing, like we're all sitting around the table, like laughing with each other and just like having lighthearted conversation. And I think I brought up, like, we were talking about like your family and you're like, and we're all laughing. You're like, and my kids mean everything to me. I dedicate everything to my children. All of my family. Like, it's everything.
Clear
to
the breakfast plates. God, did you listen to me?
I mean, your face was smile. That got like deadpan serious. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm right up with serious about that. But loves his family, man, for real. So that was awesome. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. So, man, and I see like clips of you and your kids and like you jamming on the guitar sometimes. Yeah. It looks like a beautiful thing.
It's just, you know, it's tough, man. Like thinking about maneuvering through the world and where you put your time and your energy. And like those girls, my two daughters, Story, who's 8, and River, who's 5, and my wife, it's hard because it happens so quickly, man. And like being present with them, but it's the most beautiful gift, and it's expanded my heart in ways that I couldn't imagine. And so, yeah, man, it's just like, I feel blessed.
You know, another thing, man, you know, I love that, you know, that you're centered around working with the youth, even though you have like a wide span of age, but it's like very centered on the youth. You know, I work with teenagers and like 12 in that same age group, right? A lot now. And man, dude, I am just so, because I can like, when I'm talking to these young people, during the conversation, like I'm reflecting on me when I was like 14, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And my crowd of dudes that I thought were the coolest people at 14.
Yeah.
And there's no way, I don't know if it's like I don't know if these kids now have they're just smart, man. They have capacity and creativity that blows my mind daily. I know every generation kind of like poops on the next generation, right?
Right, right.
But I'm telling you right now, dude, I know from like witnessing just these kids in conversation, you know, how much they know. Like I got 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds that I know for a fact can get a degree.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Now, without a doubt. I mean, that's how much and their expression is great. I think, you know, the problem is, you know, it's all nurture, man. It's like what's around them, dude. Yep. It's like really makes their decision making and you know, how they execute things really, you know, not healthy. You know, to make those unhealthy choices. But as far as like, you know, being creative and like the way their thought process is going and
they
how beautiful that is, dude. Yep. It's like something that floors me every time I'm in group with them or I talk with them one on one. It just makes me just like, I love them. I truly love all of them, man, for whatever, you know, uniquely different reasons.
It
gives me like the motivation to really want to get down and be helpful in some way
to
their families too, man. You know what I mean? Because they face a lot, you know, divorce, all that kind of stuff, man, you know, abuse, you know, and the crowd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like what influences are coming into them, you know, it just really like leaves them in a hard spot as far as making a good decision, even though they're so smart and creative nowadays.
And that's that, I mean, with you sitting with them and seeing their true essence and their beauty and their light and their strength, I think that's the key, because so many of them can't see that for themselves.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite quotes is, the most powerful force in the human psyche is how you describe yourself to yourself.
Mm.
And part of this mentoring, coaching, counseling, healing, working with youth work, is I'm going to help you see your beauty.
Awesome.
You have it. You don't have to go find it somewhere else. And you know, man, all the growth, like identity, ego, development, peer groups, family, it's the key is, can you see your potentiality, your beauty, and the divine spark and light within you? And if you have an environment that fosters that,
then you can
maneuver whatever the hardships are, man, because the hardships are coming and life's challenging, man, and it brings suffering and pain and sorrow. But if you got that community and that tribe that sees you, loves you, sees your light, sees your potential, sees it,
gives
you
that
struggle,
attention, tries to bring, makes an effort to bring that out in you.
Yep.
I mean, and it literally, I mean, I'm saying, like, you know, sky's the limit. I mean, there's no end to, like, I know the young people that I speak to, there is no limit to what they can accomplish. I mean, and it's really a blessing for me to sit in there and just have time with these guys. Like,
it's sacred.
Like they say, like the therapeutic value is all on me, dude, during those sessions, man. And one of the things, you know, I was thinking about like what you do, right? And like it's mostly like what I do is mostly like process, you know what I mean? But I encourage people, you know, drawing and like sketching while we all rap together, right?
Cool.
And one time, one of the young girls brought in like a whole like sewing kit, like a cross stitching kit, and like everybody like grabbed it, and like they were just like doing all this cross stitching stuff and just like pooping on their parents the whole time. They're like, "My mom, man," and they're like cross stitching, and like it was so awesome. It was an epic moment, dude. It was epic, dude.
And that's experiential, right? Yeah, there, man. It is. Anything that's not just, and how does that make you feel, and is like one-on-one sitting, but anything that's like, engage in this activity with me.
Yeah.
Let's do something together, man. Let's work on something, because then it opens up the ability to share, and it's beautiful, man. And
I was very free, like a lot of free talk during that exercise. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
I have so much respect and value for the work that you do with the youth and the counseling work that you do, man. David. It's beautiful.
Thank you, brother. Listen, people. This is Wes from Eternal Strength. You guys got a taste of what he has going on. Now, it's in Roswell, right? Mm-hmm. It's in Roswell,
right,
man.
By
please
Q
check
barbecue.
Him out. You know what I'm saying? If you have, you know, if you're seeking help or you're seeking assistance for you, your family, your kid, anything like that, or you know somebody like that, man, hit my boy up, man. It sounds like he got an amazing blessing going on over there where he's at. And again, so final thoughts of tonight. So let's see. We covered this California sober thing. I think we hit on that pretty well, right? For me, it's just, man, it was a blessing tonight to be able to like really hang out with you and get to know you, Wes, dude. I mean, but something that we've been wanting to, they've been telling me, Dave, you got to meet Wes, man. He's just like us. So I've been like waiting for the moment to be able to like have more conversation with you. And I just think it's a blessing for the Most High Show to do it in this fashion, to be able to share your story and what you got going on with the world, man. And I appreciate you. And thank you for being here, brother.
David, thank you. Thank the Most High family. I think it's community, collaboration.
Yeah.
Like I said, I feel honored, man. I really do. And you guys showed up at a time in my life that I needed some real solid friendship and connection, and I feel like there's beautiful growth on the horizon.
I do too, dude. I feel it, bro. I really do, man. It's something's about to happen.
Hell yeah.
I feel that.
You mean in a place where
you were,
life is folded in on them, and there feels like there's no hope,
yeah,
and no way out. Man, I'd probably part of me wants to like answer it, and the other part of me is, man, I'd sit with them. I'd probably just sit with them, man. I'd probably just hang out, like my good buddy John said. Like, it's the idea of they got to know that they're loved no matter what. And that there's beauty and truth for them wherever they're at, man. Wherever they're at, whatever they've been through, there's a light, and they can move towards that. And it's just slow and steady, man. Doesn't have to be anything crazy. It's just, I think you can let go, and you can start moving in a way and trust that your life will get better if you accept and let go.
I guess
I'd say, I don't know. That's a heavy question.
That was a heavy answer, bro.
I'm going to be all night.
That was heavy.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, I mean, that's, man, it's heavy to think about because everybody's so unique and so individual and got so much, but like, go within. They hold the answer within. We all do. Go within, listen to that voice that you know is telling you truth, and move towards that. And there's beauty ahead. Yeah.
Well, you heard it here, folks. My brother says, go within. Mm. And if you're in a dark place and you're suffering, Wessa, come hang out with you, man.
No doubt.
And we'll work with it.
Anytime.
And get through and show you that love, man. But listen, guys, man, thank you for joining us. Download the Most High Media app. All right. It is a Netflix of recovery. You see this right here? You see that? No high like the Most High?
What?
We got these shirts. You need to purchase one because there is no high like the Most High. Thank you guys, man. Deuces.